Show relevant financial relationships, FYI. My name is Sarah Powell. I am a director, project director at the Temple University Center for Preparedness, Research, Education, and Practice, which is mostly housed in the Public Health Department. And I've been doing work with the Department of Behavioral Health in Philadelphia for about 6 years. Working on some different kinds of projects. Today I'll be talking about continuity planning, some work I've done with the mental health provider agencies. You know, but other projects I work on, and if you have any interest in some of these other, or experience in some of these other areas, you know, by all means let me know. But we've been working on disaster mental health primarily, and creating community-level response teams that deal with local traumatic incidents and local crises within communities in Philadelphia, as well as cross-training people for larger-scale events like, you know, large and small-scale disasters that might have larger scope. So today I'll be talking about continuity planning. It's dry material. I'll try to keep it a little bit exciting. I'm sure you all had lunch, so nobody's allowed to go into food coma right now. I'll try to keep you awake. And a recent study we did. So basically, the Department of Behavioral Health came to us about basically trying to get a baseline understanding of where the provider agencies are within their system, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But our focus for our survey had to do with levels of agency preparedness, planning, dissemination, and training. So we were looking at how their emergency response plans were being passed along to staff, you know, how staff members were trained about it. Did they do any outreach to the consumer population? You know, what was happening in terms of their planning in general? And the goal was really to get a sense of what the needs are. You know, did they need help developing the plans? Did they need help providing training? As you probably can imagine or know, many community-level behavioral health agencies are pretty under-resourced. So, like many in this world, nonprofit world included, there's always, you know, something that goes to the back burner, and a lot of times that would be planning, even when you're dealing with a very vulnerable population. So this was a survey. We did have a qualitative discussion attached to that survey. We were speaking with key informants. So basically the people that the executive directors of that agency had designated with the task of, planning, whether that be disaster, all hazards planning, or continuity planning, or both. And we had about a 63% response rate, which was pretty good. But we really wanted to talk to all the agencies, especially because it was just an important topic. When we compiled the data and gave it back to DBH, we didn't use any identifiers or anything like that. And I think some of the agencies were concerned about that because they didn't know, you know, whether the department would be upset or penalize them in some way. So I just wanted to get into just very briefly talking about planning itself so that you know really where I'm going with this and why long-term continuity planning is important. So following, just in general, of companies that have had a major loss of business data, 43% never reopen, and 6% will survive long-term, which is very significant. And that works for really across the board any kind of business, not just NGOs and agencies like this. This was a study that was done by the Urban Institute following Hurricane Katrina that looked specifically for nonprofit health and human services and what agencies were fully operational all the way down to what agencies were presumed closed because there was no contact available. And as you can see, 43% of health and human services agencies just disappeared off the face of the map following Katrina. When you're serving the population that those agencies serve, and this, you know, this is a broader scope than just behavioral health and substance abuse services, you know, that's very significant that you're losing all those resources. So I'm going to be looking at system requirements. I'll talk to you about that in terms of county and Philadelphia, the state, the client population we deal with, the agency structure, resources, and awareness. levels, which were really the things that came to the fore when we were doing this study. System requirements are minimal, really, especially from the local level. The City of Philadelphia Department of Behavioral Health, which is actually Department of Behavioral Health, Intellectual Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services, all together in one agency, really has only ever required that the agencies have a plan, quote unquote. They don't want the agencies to send them their plan. They're not reviewing the plan. It's really been a matter of not knowing whether they should add that layer of review and, you know, into their process, which would, of course, be another bureaucratic difficulty. However, the state often has requirements of the agencies for licensing purposes. So some agencies, particularly residential programs, will have to have some kind of a shelter-in-place plan, for instance, you know, for the state to give them their license. So that does exist. It's uneven. There's no, you know, even DBH doesn't really know across the board which kinds of facilities or agencies have what kind of requirements. I mean, they don't have kind of a comprehensive picture for that. The client population, of course, is quite vulnerable. These are people with mental illness, cognitive disabilities, substance abuse issues. And the system is addressing people who don't have private insurance. So this is a population that is not privately insured. And a lot of people in the system, of course, are living in personal care homes or residential facilities. So if those facilities, you know, those are the primary caretakers for those individuals, and if they don't have a robust plan, you know, you're really dealing with some issues. And we saw situations like that come up in Katrina, when different personal care homes just flat out couldn't take care of people and had nothing really in place to do that in terms of evacuation plans and so on. The agency structure itself is kind of worth mentioning here in that there is a cohort of about 11 agencies that are part of what's called a coalition, and they were always the publicly funded base service units in Philadelphia. So there are some that do receive a lot of direct funding from DBH. There's another 44 that are pretty much private providers that are part of the system, they're part of the network. And I'm not talking individual offices, you know, one or two psychologists necessarily, but, you know, pretty robust large agencies that do receive some funding from DBH, but do receive other funding from the state, but don't necessarily receive the bulk of their funding like these former community-based mental health agencies. So DBH has a little bit more leverage with the community mental health agencies, those first 11 in the coalition, a little bit more so than with the private ones. So resources are, of course, an issue when it comes to continuity planning. We don't have a situation where there's a team of planners in place in every agency. In fact, it's usually given to, you know, the 50th task for the person who's already totally overburdened and totally has no resources at all to get information, spend time working on these plans. And it's a little uneven who gets the job, too, which I found interesting, that you'll have a facilities person who's sometimes given the job because they're already dealing with all hazards piece, like the evacuation or shelter in place. And then the agency tends to think that that's covering it without really getting into the continuity planning, when really that piece is just not even the continuity planning. That's just the life and safety piece. So the resources, and then just general awareness at the executive levels, it's just as much of an issue as it is with lower levels of people just not knowing where to go for help. A lot of times agencies have a lot of trouble just getting buy-in from the executive staff to devote the time and energy that's needed to do this right. So that's like one of the biggest issues. So just so you know what I'm talking about, contingency planning overlaps with continuity planning to a certain degree. Contingency planning are the life and safety issues. So shelter in place and evacuation, you're taking care of the people, getting them out the door, putting them in a safe place, that's contingency planning. Or being able to shelter in place for up to 72 hours, which is what the government at local and state levels is telling people they need to be prepared for. Continuity planning is being able to continue your essential services after something happens and how quickly you can get things up and running. So some of the key findings had to do with the structure itself, the resources available, the awareness. In terms of structure, you know, there's a lot of diversity in who has more robust planning. And I really find that you know, some of the large-scale, multi-state agencies do have more planning going on. It's almost like a large corporation realizing that a disaster could impact them in much larger ways, so that they might invest a bit more time. But at the same time, when you offer such a diversity of services, there seems to be a difficulty with kind of knowing how to handle all the different sorts of services. Like, you know, personal care homes have different requirements than an outpatient program. And sometimes the simple task of establishing your essential functions never really gets done. You know, that there's sort of this piecemeal process with some templates available for some sites, things like that. Of course, the base service units, those small community mental health centers, have the least amount of planning, the least amount of resources, and need the most help in terms of, you know, just basic awareness sometimes, and also resources to help them get through it. There's different issues with how people do planning, as I mentioned, designating different kinds of staff members to do it, but there's also an issue with sometimes just designating one person with the job rather than realizing that it really requires a planning team. So I have to rush along here. This is some of the statistics, some of the data that came out of the study, and as you can see, the numbers are pretty low. You know, 42% of people who are designated as being in charge of planning are aware of an agency plan. That's not looking good. 22% annually update their plan, only 11% practice their plan at all, and then very few really offer training. There's some guidelines like brochures that might be handed out to staff, but that's pretty much all they can do. And as you may know, personal and family preparedness is really key to having an operational continuity plan, because your staff has to have things in order for you to have things in order. So I kind of can repeat a little bit here. The agency structure, it's not usually a team effort. It's difficulty getting full buy-in. Resources, scarce allocation, the size of the agency makes a difference. And the awareness piece is really that both of those at the executive level and those with designated with planning need to get more training, and there needs to be more education targeted towards them. Agencies do see the need, however, for further planning. They want resources. This is something that they would like to do, but they do not have the time to go researching through FEMA databases about continuity planning for nonprofits. I mean, they just can't do it unless someone holds their hand a little bit through. That's what we have found. And they also do struggle with that executive level. Some individuals basically said, if only DBH would mandate that we had these. You know, the only way that we're going to be able to take it seriously is if we're told we have to do this, and this is what has to be in the plan. So that was kind of interesting, coming from the planner level, this desire for a top-down approach. It's incredibly important for regional interoperability. There's almost no awareness of even local Philadelphia planning. You know, in terms of just the general response structure, how it works, how they would fit into that if something were to happen. And it's just, again, an issue of building these bridges and local relationships that's so key. We've, you know, been working with some of that, but there just needs to be more of a sense that you have to pull in all stakeholders from an emergency management perspective, from a public health perspective, to really make sure that everyone knows what's going to happen and how to deal with it, especially for personal care homes. So these are some general conclusions. We have gone on to do some different kinds of trainings with them. I do a continuity workshop series with agencies, bringing the mental health agencies together, and they work with each other as well, you know, trying to solve some of the problems that are typical to their kinds of agencies. And we also have developed community response teams out of the provider network, as I mentioned earlier, who can bring a lot of other folks in their agency on board in terms of how the response works and creating those ties and connections. So it's definitely the case that people need additional resources. I know that that's often, you know, that's like what everyone says about everything in this, especially in this economy, that people are under-resourced. But I think that resources that target those providers with their needs, and even just a single, you know, training program or just a mental health institute that incorporates some of these disaster-related issues and planning issues would be totally beneficial to so many of these agencies. So I think we're pretty much done. This is my contact information. Feel free to talk to me after if you have any further questions.